You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Friday, March 8th. I'm Scott Seidenberg.
And I'm AJ Hoffman.
Celtics lose back-to-back games for just the second time this season.
And we've got a clash of the titans in the boxing world.
Here comes the Vegas Truth.
This is Straight Outta Vegas.
We are Straight Outta Vegas AM, your daily destination for sports conversation with a Vegas lean. Here's what you need to know to start your day.
Celtics lose again. What's happening, Scott?
NHL trade deadline is today.
And Francis Ngannou, Anthony Joshua will punch each other in the face today. What is the Vegas lead?
I had no idea that that fight was going on.
Really?
No idea.
Maybe I'm like a hardcore, but I've been like pumped for this fight.
I mean, first off, it's at 11 a.m. Eastern time this morning.
Yeah. So the fight's happening. Was it Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia? I think it's Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. Yep.
Okay. So it's happening across the world. So obviously it's not going to be on our timeline. But yeah, I've been pumped for this. And I love the idea that we're going to get to this fight in the middle of the day.
I just think it's crazy. It's like, I don't know. To me, this wasn't publicized. Like, I didn't hear about it. I didn't read about it. I mean, you're obviously focused in on it. I know the odds are much shorter than what Ngannou was against Tyson Fury. Ngannou was a plus 800 dog against Tyson Fury. He's only plus 230 here against Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, and first of all, I don't know that I'm going to bet a winner in this fight. I do think at plus 230, there may be some value on Ngannou. But I do have a best bet on this fight, and I'm going to go over 6.5 rounds. You could bet it at minus 140 now.
So Ngannou went the distance with Tyson Fury.
Yes. Yeah. And Anthony Joshua is not some sort of like brutal early finisher. You can go back and if you look at his fights, go all the way back to 2016. I mean, he's had, let's say, 12 fights since then. One of them has been under 6.5 rounds. One of them has not seen the 7th round. It's a rare thing for him to get someone out of there that early. And I think a guy with Ngannou's power, he's going to want to stay clear, because Anthony Joshua usually has a massive length advantage over his opponents. He doesn't really have that against Ngannou. He usually has a power advantage against opponents. He doesn't have that against Ngannou. So I think he's going to be cautious. He's going to see that, man, this guy floored Tyson Fury. I've got to be careful. I think we get a conservative approach from Anthony Joshua. He's going to try to point fight. And I think this thing goes into the later rounds, if not the distance. Mm. So I like this thing to go certainly over 6.5 rounds.
Other boxing news, it was announced yesterday that Mike Tyson will fight Jake Paul in a boxing event streamed on Netflix July 20th at Jerry's World in Arlington, Texas.
How crazy is this?
Paul's 9-1.
Yeah.
6 knockouts.
Mike Tyson's a 57-year-old man.
Yeah. With a weed company.
It's weird to me that I'm oddly interested in this fight. I wish that I wasn't interested in this fight. But I am. I want to see what Mike Tyson looks like, even at 57 years old. I do know the last couple times I saw Mike Tyson box competitively, that it did not look good, and it doesn't make me feel like he can compete on a high level anymore, but I don't know that Jake Paul's really on a high level either. So, you know, he quit on the stool against Kevin McBride. That's not a good sign, and that was in 2005, so that was almost 10 years ago. It worries me that a guy of his age is getting in there, but Jake Paul, and I think Jake Paul did a good job of tricking people, and he tricked you because you were like, this. If Jake Paul wins, it has to be rigged.
Yes.
Because you saw the video that Jake Paul posted, and everyone was like, wow, look how good Mike Tyson looks. Mm. That video is 4 years old. Mm. Jake Paul said in his tweet, I saw this video today. That doesn't mean that this video was made today.
Gotcha.
He just saw this video today. Like, I could say, man, I saw a video of this fight today of Mike Tyson against Larry Holmes.
Yeah.
I saw it today. Well, that fight happened in 1988.
But here's the thing. So he fought Tommy Fury, who was like a legitimate fighter.
Yes.
And he lost.
Yeah.
And it was a split decision. It should not have been a split decision.
No, Tommy Fury handled him.
It was a unanimous decision. Then he beats Nate Diaz in like a comical fight.
It was like a joke.
Okay, and everyone's hyping up his first round knockout of Borland over the weekend. Honestly, and I'm not accusing, but I am accusing. It's like these guys take money. Ben Askren, that fight was the biggest joke. Askren smiled and walked, hugging his family, walking out of the ring into the locker room after getting knocked out in the first round because he made more money in those 90 seconds than he made in like the last couple of fights in the UFC. You're telling me Ryan Borland couldn't go more than one round against Jake Paul?
I couldn't pick Ryan Borland out of a lineup.
Yeah, exactly. So. But he was a boxer, and everyone's like, "Oh, he beat like a legitimate boxer." Like,
I don't know about that. I know Tommy Fury didn't take money. Obviously, I don't think Nate Diaz would have taken money, and I don't think Anderson Silva took money. Now, Anderson Silva is, you know, he's not a professional boxer, and he doesn't like. It was a new
Ryan
sport
Borland
for him.
Doesn't even have a Wikipedia.
Yeah, and Anderson Silva, I know he's like almost 50 now. I'm guessing, what was he when they fought? Like maybe 45? Mm-hmm. But so you got the option of either beating these guys who were past their prime, or there are guys who I think certain, like Ben Askren probably took money. Nate Robinson, I don't know. Nate Robinson probably thought he could legitimately beat Jake Paul, and that was a mistake.
It was considered a joke at that point, you know? It was
right.
This is just like this is a stupid like celebrity boxing thing.
I mean, is that not what this is?
Yeah,
I mean that's what it feels like.
This feels like Mayweather against Logan Paul, which was a complete farce.
Yes, but the difference is Floyd
was a
Mayweather,
glorified sparring session.
Floyd Mayweather was still at an age where it was like it wouldn't be like he was so closely removed from retirement that it wouldn't have been out of this world for him to just dominate Logan Paul and humiliate him.
Yeah, but this is
so
not going
to
be.
It was unbelievable to me, that fight.
Tyson's not going to, you know, walk around the ring. Like these two are going to, like, you know, Jake Paul's going to, he's not going to want to stand toe-to-toe with Tyson, so he's going to dance around them. Tyson's just going to move slowly, and it's going to be a boar fest. It's not going to be a real fight. I'd be shocked. I'll eat my words if it's a real fight. But, I mean, I guess Tyson gets knocked out by Jake Paul. Is it like, it's, I wouldn't waste any money betting on it. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Because here's where I'm at. And I thought about this today when I was trying to figure out how I felt about this fight. You know who's also 57 years old? Hoist Gracie, who was like the first real superstar in the UFC. He's now 57 years old. I've been in the same room as Hoist within the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. He's not like a big, overwhelming, powerful presence. If you put Hoist Gracie today in an MMA cage with a five and one professional MMA fighter, not a UFC fighter, like a guy who's fought decent regional guys. Mm-hmm. He probably smashes Hoist Gracie's head in.
Yeah.
Because he's a 57-year-old man.
Yeah.
And, like, whatever you want to say about Jake Paul, the guy is clearly a high-level athlete. I don't think that's disputable. He's got access to the best, like, he's got access to unlimited money, first of all, which gives you access to the best trainers
Training,
in the world.
Nutrition, absolutely.
Yeah, like, all the best sparring partners, all of these things. It wouldn't shock me if Jake Paul is able to. It wouldn't shock me if Mike Tyson knocked his head off, because I don't know what Mike Tyson looks like today. I just know he's 57 years old, and that scares me.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't shock me if Jake Paul is somehow competitive in this fight, because Jake Paul's a man in the prime of his life, and Mike Tyson is not. So any result, but I guess that's why I'm interested, because I don't know what result would shock me necessarily.
I just love, like, the so you're saying the video going viral of Tyson training is an old video.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, and I listen, 4 years ago when that video came out, I was like, holy shit, Mike Tyson's 53 years old. Look at this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But even then, there's a difference between a 53-year-old man and a 57-year-old man.
Absolutely.
And it's like, man, what's Mike Tyson been doing for the last 4 years? I don't know.
Selling weed.
I know he hadn't been in the ring training like that every day.
No.
If he had, I'd have a different feeling about this. And if that video were one day old, I'd have a different feeling about this. But now I only kind of feel sadness because I don't want to see Mike Tyson get beat up by Little Mac. Like, basically from Mike Tyson's punch out.
No, it's by Paul. There was a fighter, Paul.
It was Mac Paul?
No, that Little Mac was different, but there was a fighter in Mike Tyson's punch out that was, and the name was Paul, right?
Was it?
I think so. There was, let's see, the characters. What were the characters of Mike Tyson's punch-out?
Glass Joe was your first opponent.
We know about Glass Joe.
Bald Bull. King Hippo.
So, in order, let's see. Soda Popinski.
Super Macho Man was very difficult. what was the guy's name? The Spaniard.
Don Flamenco.
And then Von Kaiser.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a Jake.
All right. Well, that's funny.
Great Tiger, was that a guy?
I don't know.
I think there was a guy named Great Tiger.
Joining us now in Straight Out of Vegas AM, the only two-time winner of the Super Contest and turning into a pretty darn good college basketball better, thanks to AJ Hoffman. He is Steve Fezzik. Good morning, Fez.
It's like Charlie Sheen, man, and Wall Street. It's just I'm just like going in, like I got my janitor suit on. I'm looking at the AJ Hoffman files with my flashlight. It's like, ooh, what's this? AJ's plays for tomorrow. Thank you very much. Let's start buying it up quietly. Yes.
Well, one of your strengths, and RJ has spoken about this so many times on the Dream Pod, about what separates you from everyone else, most people here in town, is it's hard to find anybody better than you, Fez, at the execution of betting. And so, you know, AJ has an incredible handicap. He'll contact you. What's the best way to execute this? Find the best number, all this stuff. That's what separates you from everybody else. How are you approaching the conference tournaments now before we get into the actual NCAA tournament? Are you doing a lot of live betting? Is this a lot of pre-flop unders? Like, what's the approach here for conference tournaments, especially with these mid-majors?
Any big venue, Arch Madness, this is true each and every year. The Big West tournament, when they used to hold it, I guess they don't hold it there anymore, in Southern California. But whenever they put in a cavernous stadium and hardly anyone shows up, unders rule. And I saw, like with Arch Madness, they went 3-1 to the under today, but I mean, every game just got smashed under by like the tune of 5 points. And if you look at the screen already for Friday, you're already seeing it when the new conferences are starting out, that all the unders are getting hit on these games that start at 9:30 a.m., then noon, then 2:30, 5, etc. So I would say if you're going to play unders in conference championships, or if you're going to play them on the opening round when the teams aren't used to the venue, you better get at it early, not late.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So are you hitting these totals like on the overnights?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's way too late to get them by the time the morning rolls around. But the problem is then you don't get very much in. And I'm sure there's people that would argue with me and say, oh, you're just killing the market, Fez. You're like, you're whacking it down. It's like, if I don't do it, somebody else will.
Every man for himself.
It's like, they're like, you're only able to get down a dime. It's like, why would you ruin the whole market? Because if I don't get it, you know, then I don't want to name other people's names, but Brad Powers or somebody else will.
You pick up enough dimes and it turns into something.
Now, AJ, I wanted to ask you because, the KenPom phenomenon, it's only gotten more publicized every single year, right? And you've detailed this before, that you've noticed the lines are getting closer to what KenPom's predictive lines are. You know, and maybe it's not just KenPom, it's Bart Torvik, it's all the analytic sites. But are you noticing like a quick market move from an open line to something that differs from what KenPom or Bart Torvik puts out?
I would say early in the season I was, but as home court became so valuable over the course of this season, and we've talked at on this show and we talked on the Dream Preview about how valuable home court has been this season, you've seen it where KenPom puts his number up, and usually that's what the books will open, and then you instantly see money come in on the home team.
But how do you handle that now because they're all neutral floors?
Well, that's what makes this my favorite time of year, is now I'm not having to handicap who I think is going to get a home whistle, you know, who I think is more likely to make threes because they're used to the venue. Now it's like it's true power ratings stuff. Like, so I love the idea. Not having to factor in home field in the NFL, like if every game were played at a neutral venue, wouldn't it be so much easier for you?
No.
Because isn't every home field advantage a little bit different?
Yes. That makes it easier to win.
Not to me. Well, now imagine there were 363 home courts in the NFL. It'd probably be a little harder to keep up with.
You know, right? And I might pay a little more attention to which games are going to be 98 degrees in Miami if they're playing outdoors and they're putting the other guys in the sunshine and Miami gets to be in the shade as an example.
No,
right?
But this brings me to my next point is because there's no home courts in a lot of these conference tournaments, does that then – do you look at the number differently? Because let's say the teams that they could have, you mentioned, AJ, how much the market has, you know, been swayed by home court, that the initial open could be team A minus six. And then the public says, well, team A is home, so we're going to push it to minus seven, minus eight. But now for a conference tournament, if they open up team A minus eight, because that's what it was early in the regular season, are you now taking the opposite side because it's on a neutral? Like, how are you factoring in that?
I don't think anyone cares what they were dealing. When West Virginia plays Iowa State, right, at the Hilton, I don't think the odds makers give a hoot. They just look at the power ratings. It's on a neutral. They take the difference. Boom. That's what they open. Would you agree with that?
I do. I think the one time I'd say that they will hedge a point or so is if there's a team who they think – has real motivation. Like, this team has to win this game to keep moving on. Otherwise, they're done for the season. The teams that are already locked into the tournament, like have an at-large bid locked up, those teams are less likely to have that tax on them than the teams that we're talking about on the bubble now, that they need to win their conference tournament to get into.
I like betting bubble teams because you know it's do or die for them. Whereas a team that's already firmly in the field is just like, you know what? If we don't make the conference tournament final, we get like 5 days off before the opening round, as opposed to winning a championship on a Saturday or Sunday, then having to travel and play the first round on Thursday.
But as of now, the conference tournaments that are happening this week.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Because these are all one bid leagues. The one exception being the Missouri Valley, who is a potential two-bid league. If Indiana State and Drake make the final, we could probably see both those teams get in.
I'd leave them both out.
You can't leave both out. And the Missouri Valley is a good league.
It's dreadful. I saw the Arch Madness today. It's just dreadful.
The fourth best Missouri Valley team is better than most of the, like, better than the best Big West team.
All right, fair enough. The, hidden home field, like, tournament's going to be in Vegas. Gonzaga travels very well.
Gonzaga only, like, I think Gonzaga is an incredible bet. I'm just going to bring this up right now. West Coast Conference Tournament here in Vegas at the Orleans Arena. St. Mary's is the one seed. Now, we know there's only three teams in that conference. AJ, you would agree. It's St. Mary's, San Francisco, and Gonzaga.
Yes.
Okay. Because St. Mary's is the one seed, they don't have to play Gonzaga or San Francisco until the finals. So is there value on St. Mary's at plus 115 right now to win the West Coast Conference Tournament, knowing that they're probably not going to be plus 115 in the championship game?
Oh, my God, no, because they're not going to be plus 115. If they play the Zags, they're going to be like plus 138.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think, AJ?
And Gonzaga, like
– Gonzaga will have more of the crowd for sure.
Gonzaga will have a huge crowd advantage. And also, Gonzaga hasn't lost to San Francisco since 2012. Yeah, they're on a 29-game win.
So we know it's going to be Gonzaga St. Mary's in the final.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga's going to be laying.
And Gonzaga will be more than
Maestri?
And it's probably three. And the way that this tournament is set up, it's so advantageous to the higher seeded teams. Well,
they're automatically in the semifinals.
Yeah, you get three byes.
Weren't the Zags just only catching 1.5 at St. Mary's or two?
Well, this
so if that's the case, you flip it on a neutral and the Zags took them out beyond the woodshed on top of it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Well, this brings me to my next point. This brings me to the other side then. So is Gonzaga minus 125 now a value play?
I like Gonzaga. I don't know it's a value play, but I like Gonzaga to win the tournament. I think they're the best team.
Well, Fez, you're just going to say bet them in the semifinal and then bet them again in the final.
Yeah, because they're not going to be minus 3,000 in the semifinals. They're going to be like a 10-point favorite.
Yeah.
So you're going to be able to lay like minus 560. So lay the minus 560. You enter to the dark side. By the way, I have a story. I got Irvine tonight, minus like 3,400-ish. And like I was busy, so I told my friend the crack man, hey, can you get me 400 on this? You know, just they're gonna win, all right? And he misread my text. And initially I said to him, get me 1,000. Then the odds went up, and so yeah, I said get me 400. And he responded back, oh, you're filled. You got 1,000. All right. So this is very important. I think like when you work with people, there's a lesson to be learned. Here is how not to be a successful bettor. Say, what the hell are you doing? I only asked for 400. You got to split it down the middle. How about you take 300? I'll take 700, right? You know, we compromise because I only asked for 400. If you do something like that, you suck at this. All right. My response, it's fine. It's cool. I'll take the 1,000 because like here's someone who's doing you a favor. They're doing the best they can. And they didn't bet the wrong side. They just got the amount that you want. If you ask someone and for 500 and they give you 1,000 or 300, you just shut your pie hole and say thank you and don't complain about stuff like that, because here's a guy that's trustworthy, that's doing you a favor. And guess what? You start like haggling, bitching about like little tiny things like that. Mm-hmm. And then guess what? There's plenty of other people that Bill can work with and do a great job, and I'm just thankful he's a guy like that is willing to help me out when I'm tied up on things.
Well, I've seen you do it the opposite way. I've seen you be the one that puts in the wrong number and then texts back, I accidentally put it in for 1,000. Don't worry, I'll take 500 of it.
Always. When in doubt, always just – I mean, like in the greater scheme of things, it's not going to matter. And like, I got one friend – I'll use an example. So, like, I was like, it's Napa Mike, who has been on the show, and I'm literally screaming at him because we have this account and we all share on it, okay? Mm-hmm. And he wants to do like, hell, I want to do like some of my Arizona bets, and this other guy wants to do some player props, and it's like, well, I'll keep trying. No, absolutely. So here's where I'm dogmatic. You wind up spending all your time like counting $5 bills and and $15 bills. No, if we split the account one third, and every now and then every one of us will make a stupid bet. It's fine.
So you're not a fan of playing futures here when it comes to the conference tournaments or the NCAA tournament.
You know, I bet Connecticut back when they're plus 650. So it's funny how everyone else, I'm totally different. Everybody else in the world. Like I'm literally pulling my hair out. I'm screaming when I listen to them because here's what I hear. All you got to do is find a team that's undervalued, bet them to win, to make the Final Four or win the tournament. They don't have to win the tournament. They just have to make the elite, the Sweet 16.
They think it's so easy to hedge out.
And then you can earn. Oh, yeah. So I can take a team that's like 40% to make the Sweet 16, and when they make the Sweet 16, I can earn 30 cents on the dollar. You know, it's like it's such a terrible advice, that people give out. And literally, I'm like, I looked at Circa, and I've been back and forth with Jeff Benson on this. And like Alabama's 20-1 to win the championship. Or you can lay 50 to make a dollar that they don't win the championship, minus 5,000. 20-1, and he's like, oh, but the spread, the house edge is kind of tiny on that, all right? And he's correct. If you bet both sides and you look at the weighted average, it's a very small house advantage. But that doesn't mean it's beatable. And the best example I can give, I'll go into more depth on this, later on, but roulette wheel. Imagine I open up the Fezzik roulette wheel, and I say, I have the most favorable odds in the world. My house edge is going to be 0.4%. Are you guys interested?
So what you're saying is not just single zero, you have a half a zero.
No. No. I have the same exact identical wheel with one small change.
Okay.
And what the change is, instead of paying 35-1, I pay 34-1 on a number. and my house edge is only 0.4%. How is that possible? Because in my roulette world, you can bet the no. And you can bet 40 to win a dollar that a certain number does not come up. Now, obviously, that's a bad bet also. They're both bad bets. They're both equivalent bad bets because the true odds are 37 to 1. So minus 3,700 plus 37, no vig, is what the wheel odds should be. Mm-hmm. But magically, by putting minus 4,000 out there, it turns out the house edge on this is 0.4%. How is that even possible? How can that be that there's almost no edge? Well, think about it. I'm only going to lose when I bet the no when 33 black comes up, okay? Mm-hmm. So 37, 38 of the time, I'm going to get my money back. So even if you pay me nothing, so I could bet the no for it, and I'm laying a zillion, okay?
37 out of 38 times you're getting that
37
little back.
Out of 38 times I'm getting my money back. So literally the house edge on paying on minus 10 zillion is, you know, like 2.6%. And I'm getting something back as well. So it turns out on the no side, it's like betting pass, don't pass. It's like betting the no on a roulette wheel. The house edge is minus, it's 0.2%. And even though the 34 to 1 carries an 8% edge, it's so, there's so much more money being wagered on the no than on the yes, because you only put your $1 versus 40 that the aggregate, it's 0.4%. So that kind of disproves when the bookmaker says this is a beatable market. There's a big bid-ask differential, but the theoretical hold is, you know, is less than 4.5%, so it's beatable. No, it's not beatable.
So is there a way to play the no and then play the yes somewhere else? Like whatever, like shop the odds?
Well, theoretically, like, you can have middles, but the house takes too big of a vig now with exchanges.
But not if you're at the same book, though. Do it at a different book.
Yeah, but there's, how are you going to, like, Alabama's 20 to 1. How are you going to find, you're only getting 20 to 1.
You find in Alabama, Alabama's 30 to 1 in DraftKings. Find the book that has higher odds.
Maybe at a betting exchange. If you can find a couple betting exchanges, yeah. It's possible. And the number one thing, too, I've noticed is, like, and people advocate all the time, like, playing the money line. And, like, the odds are, like, plus 220, minus 260. And I'm like, you can't win playing with that big of a straddle. And all these, like, math guys are, like, all over my ass. They're like, no, you're wrong, Fez. Those can be really beatable. The Theo hold is small, and those can be really mispriced. Well, maybe they're mispriced if it's turtle races or, you know, if it's fifth-grader dart contests. But on major sports, things just don't get mispriced that often. And the best evidence I can give, every time I go to a betting exchange and I look at those theoretically beatable minus 260s, plus 220s, guess what? The exchange always says minus 233, plus 228. You know, it's always well into the quarter on both sides, pinched. And there aren't people like, I mean, that's bettable, and there aren't people betting it. So it means it's going to be awfully hard to win taking plus 220, laying minus 260. But having said all that, I did bet Cal Irvine minus like 3,500 today. I hope they won.
Now, when you talk about the minus 260 plus 220 thing, like, so that comes up a lot for me when I'm betting fights. Like, I'll give you an example. There's the main event on Saturday at UFC 299. The favorite minus 265, the dog plus 225. You think that's over the long haul? You don't think that's a winnable game?
I think MMA fights are loose, are not as priced as well as baseball games and college basketball games and the like. So it would not be unusual, I don't think, for an overhyped fighter where it really should be like minus 190, no vig, or you've got a guy that's just off the couch and maybe it should be minus 290. But what I'm saying is, like, there are exchanges for these things, like Profit Exchange, sure, in New Jersey. And, like, when I go to that exchange, guess what? It's always like minus 248 plus 242. So I just say, get more outs. Given it's beatable, I think there are select fights like that are beatable. Like, most famous probably would be the Mayweather fight, where Mayweather was minus 450 and McGregor was like plus 350, yes, right? That's a 100-cent straddle. No one could beat that.
Except you knew who was going to win.
But Floyd's 50-0, so you're betting. Laying 450. The fight isn't fixed.
What about the fixed fight that's coming up in the summer that just got announced? Jake Paul and Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know what to think about that, to be honest.
I mean, it's. If Mike Tyson, I know he's 57. If he doesn't win, it proves how fixed all these fights are. What do you mean, why?
Mike Tyson's 57 years old.
Did you see the video of him working out today?
Did you know that video is 4 years old?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Don't be fooled by the internet, Scott. Don't be fooled by the internet.
I have been fooled. Every time I watch Jake Paul fight, I have been fooled.
You know, why would you think...
They make so much... They're so rich. They're millionaires off of, like, YouTube and all that stuff. Like, the Ben Askren fight was the one that really sold me on it. Because Askren walked out of the ring smiling, and he made more money in that fight than he did in his last, like, 2 years in the UFC. Like, of course he took a dive in the first round and got knocked out. Like, it was the most fixed thing ever. And so, like, I don't trust any of these Paul brother fights because it's all they have so much money.
Listen,
there's no reason to compete.
Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather had a legitimate draw.
Oh, yeah. Mayweather held him up on the ropes from going down. That was the most hilarious part of that video, is Mayweather holding him up so he didn't fall down.
What is that ELO song where they go, I'm taking a dive?
I'm very down on ELO. I don't know a lot of their stuff. I'm not into light orchestras, even electric ones.
Well, we're going to do more college basketball as we get closer next week, of course, is the major conference tournaments. Selection Sunday is next Sunday. And then we will see if there will be a bridge jumper bet in round one from Steve Fezzik.
Yeah, so anyone who has been on Pluto and hasn't been following, I bet big on Purdue last year, like laid 50 to make a dollar, but a whole lot more than that. Had a bunch and bunches of zeros and times two. Something like that, and Purdue lost as a one seed. But it wasn't that they were a one seed. It's that they were a 22.5-point favorite. And I went back and looked at my chart, and 22.5 to 24-point favorites win about 99% of the time.
This was the one percenter.
And it doesn't mean they win every time. But so now the question is, could I possibly be stupid enough to bet Purdue again in the first round? I can tell you right now, almost for certain.
Oh, the answer's yes.
Oh, yeah. Because now they're going to be ultra-motivated. If ever there's a one seed, well, look at Virginia last
year. The year after Virginia lost, they won the whole tournament.
You know what, though? Get me down on that, too. Thanks, Fez.
Thank you.
Let's continue the college basketball conversation. Take a look at the conference tournament games that went down yesterday, as well as what's on store for today. There were two top 25 teams in action yesterday. One of them got upset, AJ. His number 18, Washington State, fell to Washington 74-68. Number 5, Arizona, though, blew out UCLA 88-65.
Yeah, Washington State, besides Arizona, is the only team firmly in, I think, from the Pac-12, although Colorado may have punched their ticket last night as well with a win at Oregon. But Washington State, this is a disappointing loss for them, certainly, at home to a big rival, and, mind you, a big rival that they're playing for the last time as a member of the Pac-12. So I don't know how much animosity there is between these programs, if they're going to keep playing once Washington goes to the Big Ten. But, yeah, Washington State still firmly in the field, so no worries there for them. And Arizona, boy, early in the season it was like, man, is this team legit on the road? Like, or should we be worried about them? Well, lately it hasn't seemed that way. They've been pretty strong.
Well, let's talk about conference tournaments. We'll start in the Missouri Valley, where Missouri State defeated Murray State 60-35 yesterday. Murray State scored 35 points.
No, that was the whole game.
That was the whole game. 60-35. So Missouri State advances to take on Indiana State today, AJ.
Yeah, Indiana State is the team to beat, it seems, in this conference. Indiana State, a 10-point favorite over Missouri State. That'll kick off action in Arch Madness today.
Belmont defeated Valpo 86-61, so Belmont advances to take on Northern Iowa.
Yeah, Belmont basically got to they've got to a big enough lead that they sat their starters for almost the entire second half.
Makes you feel better about today's game.
Didn't really lose any ground. This is set to be a good game today, and really you can, depending on which side you like, you can find -1 either way. But Belmont, looks like most books have them as a 1-point dog against Northern Iowa. But either way, I expect this to be probably the best game of the day in the conference.
Evansville defeated Illinois State 59-53, and Evansville will take on Drake tonight.
Drake is the other big dog in this conference. They are a 13-point favorite over Evansville, and considering Evansville had to play yesterday, now they play this Drake offense, I could see this one getting ugly.
And in double overtime. UIC with an 84-82 win over Southern Illinois. They advance to take on Bradley tonight.
Yeah. Do you want to bet on a team having to play a day after they play double overtime?
Nope.
They've got to play a fresh Bradley team. I certainly don't. Bradley, a 9.5-point favorite here.
Let's head to the Ohio Valley, where Western Illinois defeated Tennessee State 61-59, and they advance to take on Little Rock tonight.
Yeah, Arkansas Little Rock, a 3.5-4-point favorite over Western Illinois, over the Leathernecks of Western Illinois.
Morehead State got by SIU Edwardsville 78-63, and they'll take on UT Martin tonight.
Yeah, Morehead State, again, the team that played yesterday, taking on the team that had a bye. There was a three-way tie in this league, and Morehead drew the short straw, so they have to play the extra game. Odds makers don't care. Morehead State, a 6.5 to 7-point favorite on most books.
Just one game in the WCC yesterday as Pepperdine demolished Pacific 102-43. AJ, the halftime score in this one was 56-9.
Yeah, I had a 3-star best bet on Pepperdine -9.
I think you got there.
I felt pretty good about it very early. 26-0 to start the game. That's, I don't know, so that I've ever seen a game start 26-0. The crazy thing about this is, I mentioned it yesterday, both these teams have fired their coach. Like, Lorenzo Romar knows he's not going to coach Pepperdine next year. He's still coaching on the sidelines. But the team really got up to play for him yesterday. And got to give them some credit. That's a nice-looking win for Pepperdine. I mean, Pacific's terrible, but to do what they did is certainly impressive.
So Pepperdine takes on San Diego tonight.
Yeah, San Diego, a 2-2.5-point dog to Pepperdine. So Pepperdine, I guess, had the benefit of not playing all their starters in the second half. Got some walk-on minutes in there and a little fresh legs going for them against the Toreros today.
Other game tonight in the WCC, Loyola Marymount against Portland.
Yeah, Portland, a dreadful defensive team. I expect this there to be a lot of scoring in this game. Both these teams offensively have gotten better as the season's gone on. And like I said, Portland just awful on defense. Total, you can find it out there, 143. So I do think there's some value to the over. As far as the line goes, it looks like Loyola is about a 6-point consensus favorite.
Let's get to the rest of the conference tournament action for today. Early start time, noon Eastern in the Big South, High Point against Radford, AJ.
Yeah, and remember, High Point, the tournament takes place on their home floor, and they're the one seed, but it's weird because even if they weren't the one seed, the tournament would still have taken place on their home floor. I guess they built an arena that the Big South is rewarding them. So High Point, some steam already coming on High Point. They opened at -10 against Radford. Now you can find them anywhere up to 11.5 there.
Sticking in the Big South, Longwood against Winthrop.
Yeah, Longwood. This is one of the tighter games on the schedule today. Longwood, a 1-point favorite against Winthrop.
Charleston Southern takes on UNC Asheville.
UNC Asheville seems to be the outside of High Point and maybe alongside High Point, the team to beat in this conference. They're my choice to win this conference tournament. UNC Asheville, a 12-point favorite against Chuck South.
And Presbyterian takes on Gardner Webb.
Yeah, Presbo, a 6-point dog against the Running Bulldogs.
In the CAA, William & Mary takes on North Carolina A&T.
William & Mary is the favorite here. I don't know that they're as good as this line says they are. It's got them at -5. North Carolina A&T is not bad. I think there might be some value on the dog here.
Elon takes on Hampton.
Not a great feel for this game. Elon, a 4-point favorite, though, really hasn't budged since open.
CAA games are all played at the Entertainment and Sports Arena in D.C.
That's a very original name.
That's what goes on there.
That's what happens when you can't find a sponsor.
It's the Entertainment and Sports Arena. Let's go to the SoCon. The Citadel takes on Mercer.
Mercer, not great, but not Citadel-level bad. Mercer, a 4-point favorite here. They've taken money.
VMI takes on East Tennessee State.
And VMI is the dregs of the SoCon. East Tennessee State up to a 17-point favorite this morning. So I have no expectations other than East Tennessee smashes this team.
And just one game in the Summit League, South Dakota takes on Oral Roberts.
Yeah, Oral Roberts, who's been kind of the class of the Summit the last couple of years. No Max Asemus anymore. He's off in Austin, Texas, playing with the Longhorns. And now Oral Roberts is playing in the play-in game here at the Summit League. I don't have much expectation of them in this tournament, but they should be enough to get by South Dakota, now a 3.5-point favorite against South Dakota.
And two top 25 teams in action tonight. Number 25, Dayton, the 7.5-point favorite, hosting VCU. And number 21, San Diego State, also laying 7.5 as they host Boise State. NBA, for just the second time all season, and the first time since November 6th and 8th, the Celtics have lost back-to-back games, losing to the Nuggets 115-109. Jaylen Brown had 41 points in the loss. Jokic, 32 points, 12 boards, 11 assists. We call that a triple-double. Speaking of triple-doubles, Luka Doncic had himself a night. His fourth consecutive 35-point triple-double as the Mavericks beat the Heat 114-108. That fourth straight 35-point triple-double breaks a tie with Oscar Robertson and Russell Westbrook for the longest streak in NBA history. It's Luka's fifth straight triple-double, scoring at least 30 points, which only Russ had accomplished previously. Luka, 7-1 to win the MVP as of last night.
Listen, Luka is, to me, having a phenomenal season. I'd love to find a way to bet him to be the MVP. He's scoring 3.5 more points than the next closest guy in the scoring race. The problem is, I don't even know if the Mavericks are going to make the playoffs. So if Luka's team was having a little bit more success, I think he'd be a really great candidate.
Yeah.
But I just can't picture a guy who being like having to play in the play-in round being the MVP of the league. It doesn't add up.
Elsewhere last night, Pistons beat the Nets 118-112. Timberwolves topped the Pacers 113-111. The Timberwolves announcing that Karl Anthony Towns will undergo surgery to repair a torn left meniscus. He is expected, though, to be reevaluated in a month and be back in the playoffs. So good news for the T-Wolves.
And good news for the T-Wolves. They've stacked themselves up to be the top team in the Western Conference right now, so they got a little bit of wiggle room.
The Suns beat the Raptors 120-113. It was the Bulls over the Warriors 125-122. Steph Curry leaving that game after twisting his ankle in the fourth quarter, and the Kings defeat the Spurs 131-129. On tonight's schedule, Pelicans visit the Sixers, New Orleans 8.5-point favorites. Hornets are at the Wizards. Someone's got to win. Washington is -2.5. T-Wolves take on the Cavs, Cleveland -1.5. The Magic visit the Knicks, New York laying 1.5. Grizzlies host the Hawks, Atlanta 2.5-point favorites. Thunder host the Heat, OKC laying 8.5. The Bucks are at the Lakers, Milwaukee 1.5-point favorites, and the Rockets visit the Blazers, Houston laying 5.5. The NHL trade deadline is today. More moves made yesterday. Here's what went down. The Lightning getting Anthony Duclair, the forward from the San Jose Sharks. The Maple Leafs getting defenseman Joel Edmondson from the Washington Capitals. The Blackhawks sending Anthony Beauvillier, winger, to the Nashville Predators. And the biggest trade of them all, the Penguins trading away Jake Guentzel to the Carolina Hurricanes. And Guentzel was probably the biggest name forward available here at the trade deadline. He goes to a division rival, so that's a big news there in Pittsburgh and a big get for Carolina. Speaking of Carolina, another big get. This could be considered like a trade. Frederik Andersen, the goaltender, returned after a four-month absence.
Wow.
He made 24 saves as the Hurricanes beat the Canadiens 4-1 last night. So that's like getting a big-time trade,
no doubt.
Acquisition here. You have your starting goaltender who's been out for 4 months, and now he's back just in time for a playoff push. Boy, that makes Carolina a dangerous team here moving forward. Let's take a look at the schedule for tonight. The Avalanche host the Wild. Minnesota on the second of a back-to-back. Colorado's a -210 favorite. Red Wings are at the Coyotes, also on the second of a back-to-back. Detroit's -135. Stars are at the Ducks. Dallas, a heavy favorite, -290. And the Jets visit the Kraken. Winnipeg, -130. Make sure you guys head to pregame.com. Take advantage of the coupons we have available for you right now to save $15. $15. Little man, put that in my hand. Here's the promo code we'll give to you today.
If that money doesn't show,
then you owe me, owe me, owe. Zone 15 is the promo code to use today. Zone 15, Z-O-N-E 15, gets you $15 off any purchase at pregame.com. For AJ Hoffman, Steve Fezzik, who joined us earlier, I'm Scott Seidenberg. We are Straight Out of Vegas AM.